I've been in law enforcement for 25 years. 25 years?
Minus two.
23 years. I've done 23 years.
You were without a job for 2 years.
Well, I've had a phenomenal career. Phenomenal career. Well, I got fired. Is that bad? How many of y'all been fired from police work? Raise your hand. Oh, isn't that really a good feeling? Zero people raise their hand for you people sitting in the front. Zero people raise their hand. Well, I'm my own fraternity, so you can appreciate that.
Which is why we're here.
Yes. So let's recap the story. Redneck trash guy from Florida meets hot Spanish girl from Miami.
Hialeah. Which is worse.
Gets married. We went to our high school reunion recently. 30 years. She was the only Spanish girl at my redneck reunion, and I was the only white guy at her Spanish reunion. Isn't that awesome? We have two kids. You want to tell them?
20 and 21. He'll be 22 this month.
Yep. So we got two kids. They're in college. You know what the best part about kids that are 21 and 22? They don't live at home. Oh, sorry. I was kind of excited about that. Anyway. So anyway, that's who we are. What got us here? Hold on just a minute. We flew here on an airplane from Florida. We jumped on a Delta airline. And there's a lot of cool things I like to do. I always like surprises. So I haven't told my wife about this surprise yet. So I think this is really cool that I wanted y'all to see what my flight was like. The first date we went on, we went to a high school football game in Palakas. She'd never seen a high school football game. And so I took her to this one in my hometown. And we were driving on our way over there, and we rode by the paper mill, and she was sleeping in the car. That was my first date. She was sleeping in the car, and while we're driving along by the paper mill, she woke up because she smelled something funny in the car.
You farted.
She thought it was me. But it wasn't. It was the car. It was the paper mill. So I rolled the window down, and I proved it to her that I was correct. So I thought over 27 years, she would change her behavior on our date. But she didn't. This is us on the airplane. That is her underneath the gray sweater. And that's me taking selfies on an airplane on the way here. She has no idea those pictures are there.
You're horrible.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yes.
I thought so. I thought it was pretty awesome. Everybody else thought it was funny, too. Everybody was dancing and putting their fingers in your ear and whatever else they could do. So anyway, our dates haven't changed. Never laugh at your wife's choices because you're one of them. Now, I've been public speaking a long time. I used to be a college/high school alcohol and drug comedian. I'd go around the colleges, tell a really cool story. And what we didn't tell you about our background is that we're both orphans. My parents were killed by a drunk driver when I was a young child.
Two.
I was two, Martha.
I was 14 when my parents were killed.
Her parents were murdered in a double murder-suicide, alcohol-related, when she was 14. So we were both orphaned, and we met at a really young age. And I tell you that because as we slide in here, I kind of want you to build up to where we're at now from where we were at then. And I want to also tell you folks that whatever sob stories or sad stories or whatever stories you're going to hear today, I want to tell you about God's grace at the end. I want to make sure that you understand God's grace at the end of this whole process. And that's why we're going to tell you stories from the beginning. And that's why we just told you what we told you about our background. We wanted you to know our background. And we'll kind of get into that more. But what got us here? The question is, how did we end up here? Why are we here? Well, I started law enforcement when I was 23 years old. Martha was a college student at the University of Florida. I tried to get employed with the Highway Patrol in the state of Florida after serving in the United States Navy. How many people were in the Navy? Were you really, Mr. Williams? Really? Did you have a real job in the Navy? Yeah, because I was a navigator. I didn't have a real good job. I always tell everybody, I wasn't in the military, I was in the Navy. That's what I always tell everybody. So all the Marines always laugh at me. But we came here because I was 23 when I got into police work, and Martha had finished college there, or was finishing college.
Finishing.
And so I got into police work, and we kind of took off our career. And I can't tell you folks what a phenomenal career I had. It was as successful as I got promoted rapidly. I've had every cool job you can imagine in police work. Folks, I've gone all the way from being The head football coach's personal assistant at the University of Florida is his personal cop you see all over the country on TV to run in game day operations for a big stadium, to meet in multiple presidents of the United States, to run in presidential visits. I have been incident commander on massive events, Rolling Stone concerts, you name it, I've been blessed to have that opportunity. But all good things come to an end, or maybe God just has another plan. And in 2010, my career came to an end on a shooting of a minority subject in a married housing complex at the University of Florida. I was an incident commander for a very, very high-profile incident. If you read a lot of Google stuff on me, you'll find out that a lot of people will say it was kind of the start of this whole chaos. It was a grad student. He was out of control. The day before they'd been there, they were going to Baker Act him, and they weren't able to make contact with him and retrieve him to Baker Act him. Baker Act him is our mental health system. So they contacted us again that night. I wasn't working that night. I was working an event at a basketball game on TV. It turned into this chaos at the scene. He threatened to shoot some people. So they contacted me and asked me to come over there with a team of our CIRT officers. And it went well. It went so well. Folks, where in this country do you shoot somebody with two tasers and four beanbag rounds before you use deadly force? Think about that. The police officers that night, myself and four others, went in on his house thinking had already killed himself. We found him armed with a butcher knife and a table leg, and we shot him with two tasers, four beanbag rounds, got no compliance, and ended up one of the officers had to shoot him with a rifle. Could not have gone any better. State cleared us. Department of Justice cleared us. Department of Education cleared us. State attorney said it had to be handled that way. But that doesn't matter. What matters is, and you're going to hear me if you come to my second block later on when I get into this, is leadership fails, somebody's going to fall, and in this country, we are the people who take the blame. And I was the incident commander that night. I had a year-to-year contract. They non-renewed it. And I'm all about being non-renewed. Except when you get non-renewed, guess what happens in the world of the internet? Your name gets destroyed. And it ruined my career, it ruined my opportunities. I thought, I went 5 years where I couldn't get a job, a real job. Right? No, I went 2 years. I've been a cop 5 years since then. Mm-hmm. I went 2 years where I couldn't get a real job. I got hired by the head coach of the Florida Gators to go to Ohio State. I worked up there for about 3 months. I got fired from up there because of what happened in Gainesville. I could not get a job. And then I ran across a guy named Travis Yates that owns LawOfficer.com. Travis Yates met me in a driving class because I got a little chicken fender bender in my patrol car where I currently work. And he said, your story is phenomenal. We need to tell your story. And he contacted a lady named Vicki Newman, who's sitting in the back, who her and her husband are here presenting. Vicki Newman wrote an article. That article exploded, called the Stacey Attell Story. She wrote it on Martha and I. And that story took off. And from there, WatchGuard Video created videos. Those videos took off. And now I'm back speaking again. So God's grace. Never know what's going to happen at the end. But we're not here for me. And we're not here for us. We're here for y'all. Right?
Yeah, but I didn't get to finish.
Okay, you go ahead.
So can you hear me so that I don't have to hold it like this? Yes? Okay. So during that transition when he got fired, that one thing that we never expected in our wildest dreams would ever happen because of his impeccable career. Again, after 17 years, he, in my eyes, and I think a lot of in the department's eyes, he did everything right. When he came home that night and he said, I've just been involved in a shooting. Now, obviously, I think that was like 2 o'clock in the morning. He falls to sleep within 3 seconds. I'm awake for the rest of the night, but I'm only awake because I was like, oh my gosh, what happened? He's like, it's okay, we'll talk about it tomorrow. But I think it was that's how he is. I knew and I had faith that if he was the commander of a shooting, that everything would go all right. Well, then he gets fired and our world just comes crashing completely down. I think it was the very next day or the following day, we get a card. Fred Cantrell he had retired.
He was a vice president.
He was a vice president of the University of Florida, had worked a lot with Stacy. And the first card that we get is the scripture verse, Jeremiah 29:11. And it's, you know, I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to help you prosper and give you a hope in the future. We didn't know how much that scripture verse would become our backbone that would lead us through the next 7 years. And I say 7 years because we're right here right now, but I never, never thought that we would be right here right now. Because in those 7 years, we lost everything. sold my wedding rings and everything, 2 weeks away from leaving our home, because we had already used the last month's rent, and our landlord was gracious enough to say, you know, you can stay here until you figure something out. And that was 2 weeks. We were going to have to be out. We were even thinking of where our kids would go with somebody, and then we would go off on our own to go figure something out. Those 2 years that he applied for jobs, again, you look at Stacy Attell on the computer, he's the only Stacy Attell in the world other than our daughter. So that's why he didn't work for those 2 years. He didn't want to go back into law enforcement because of the politics and what he had already gone through. So there were Christmases with no presents underneath the tree. That was just our reality. Again, when you lose your home, you lose everything that you thought. We planned everything. We planned our wedding. We planned our children's birth. We planned everything. And so this was not part of our plan. So that scripture verse would become what would get us through up until, still does.
Oh, it does. Yeah. It's amazing what it does. And she makes a really good point there about, I want you to understand our background, folks. I grew up in a Baptist church. She grew up in a Catholic church. She went to Catholic school. I was the youth pastor every year. You know, I mean, folks, we were as...
I repented, though. Yeah. I'm a Baptist now.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're not a submissive Baptist. I can assure you that. Yeah, not a submissive Baptist for y'all that are Baptist.
Well, I'm Cuban. Yeah.
I have knife wounds on my back to prove it, just to let you know. Not that that's stereotypical for anybody in here. But when Mr. Cantrell sent that was a huge message to us right out of the gate. And folks, let me tell you, my wife is much stronger. You hear me talk about her than I am in the faith world. And it truly was a test. And folks, let me tell you, for you men sitting out there, I want you to look at me for a minute and think, I was you. Could not have had a better career, could not have been more successful, and I had it all under control. I had it, every bit of it, under control. I knew exactly when I was going to get promoted. I knew how successful I was going to be. I was going to be a chief. I was going to be a sheriff. There was nothing going to stop me. But guess what, folks? That's not your plan. God has a plan for you. And that's what I had to learn. And she kept telling me. We'll talk about that as we kind of roll through this here a little bit. This class, we're going to talk a lot about this integrity side of it, because the integrity is a huge issue that you're going to hear me talk about in the second session also. But also here, it's the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. The state of being whole and undivided. But really, if Satan desires to deceive, divide, and destroy your influence and our testimony, you can elaborate on that, whatever.
I think part of our life, we have had a testimony and we have had an influence. We taught Sunday school and everything in Gainesville. It was our hometown. The last day that we closed the doors in our little house, we bought a little fixer-upper because we didn't want or need anything big. When I closed the door to that house and left, what I felt like, and I said it, I'm like, this is what they wanted to take from us. We had nothing. We had each other. We had our family. And that was the most important thing. That's obviously what they can't take from us. But Satan did, I believe, try to sit there and destroy. Well, we would go back on campus, and they said that we were crazy. We were trespassed from campus. We were actually locked in our house. We would go to, we were at Belk's, we were
the mall.
At a department store, and some guy turns around and says, you look familiar. And then it clicked who he was, because he traveled with Urban Meyer, friends with Urban Meyer. And the guy turns and says, oh, you're that guy. And he says, yes, I am that guy. The guy turned and was so disgusted, him and his wife, and they turned
grabbed
their backs.
His wife.
Yeah, and left because we were so disgusting to them. We were at pizza places, and people would write articles and editorials in the paper because they saw us, and they would write whatever. Remember that one lady? She wrote how rude we were. Best thing was, and she said it was us and our three kids. We only have two kids, but it didn't matter. She wrote this article that we had been disgusting to these three people and her and rude. So we were locked in our home, and so we had to leave Gainesville after 22 years. And move.
And I think we're telling you this because, folks, not because you might not ever experience, but what if you do? What if it happens to you? You live in Indiana. Some of you live in other surrounding states. You know, folks, we're talking about one of the most liberal colleges in the country. It is a very anti-law enforcement college, and they went crazy. They protested. Remember, I didn't get fired the next week. 5 months later, 3 months of an investigation, 2 months of internal, 5 months later. So we're talking about a long process that we had to sit and watch protesters and just crazy stories and videos and every video you can imagine. So we want to talk a little bit about this thing called right living. Right living, and we look at integrity as far as doing things right. If we can front door right living, if we can teach you to live right now, if you can live right now, then when the challenges come upon you, you're going to be able to survive these things. And I'll talk a little bit about that. But the umbrella is an amazing fixture. The umbrella has a bunch of spines. The spines are important. It's the web in between the spines, the material on top. If you were to break that pie looking top up, it would have various areas in your life along your life's path. The thing about an umbrella, and it's up here, is that it keeps you dry underneath. Your life kind of goes okay. But the moment that that umbrella gets a tear in it, gets one little tiny hole in it, it now starts contaminating you. Well, that little hole comes from some failure in our life that we weren't living right. I don't know what those are for you. I'm going to tell you, folks, I thought my umbrella was solid. I was pretty cocky about it. I was pretty confident. I didn't drink at all. I didn't smoke. They married the same woman. I could brag that I was the only guy in the military to ever go through it that didn't smoke, drink, or have sex with women in foreign ports. Thought I'd get an award.
Or American ports, too.
Do what? Or American ports, yeah. Well, that's because I was ugly and couldn't get a date, so it worked out perfect. But I still am. But anyway, and plus, Mr. Williams picked on me for wearing a pink shirt. So anyway, that umbrella is a sign of what weakness in our life, which one of those pies do we have a little hole in that's dripping in and it's going to cause negative attention on us when something happens. And I think that's a crucial part for you to think about as we go through this.
Do you want me to add?
Sure.
So one of the things that we have always discussed, we tend to compartmentalize. And so if one area of our life is good, then that means that they're all good. And that's not the case. Our preacher gave a story about the rotten apples. Does the good apple mixed in with the bad apples, does it make the bad apples good? No. But one bad apple in the group of good apples will ruin all those good apples fast. And that's kind of like what we've seen in our life. The integrity, the things that you do right, have to be right in all those areas of your life. That's how it stays solid. But in one area, you get one little hole, one little thing that you're not right in, and that could be from alcohol,
relationships
with your spouse, money, anything. It affects the whole thing. And so that's what we are, I guess, are here for. We don't have it right, but we're trying to grow to keep it right.
And we're going to show you examples of it doesn't catch you today. Your behavior doesn't catch you today. But I'll tell you about some people in here that it does catch you. This is a newspaper ad from the local newspaper in Gainesville where the shooting happened that was taken out. That's an actual full-page ad out of the newspaper. What you have in front of you is the media went and pulled everybody's service records from their agency. These are the five people involved in the shooting that night. The top left guy had a rifle. He didn't engage because he didn't have a shot. The left side guy was a sergeant of 24 years in law enforcement. The middle guy in the bottom was a motor officer who happened to be working the detail, was on our special response team. The far guy on the right, Keith, he was the one who pulled the trigger. And then you got me. What I want you to look at is, it's hard to read because it's an old picture from 7 years ago, but what's important about that is it goes through our backgrounds. Here's what I had. How many people are sergeants or above in this room? Sergeants or above. Here's what you get dealt with that night. What you get dealt with is the officer on the bottom 2 weeks earlier was directing traffic and handcuffed a student to a stop sign and went back and directed traffic. That's pretty cool. You ever want to direct traffic? Somebody wouldn't stop. You're like, I told you to stay on the sidewalk. Oh, you don't want to stay on the sidewalk? Click, click. I'll be with you in a minute. And went back and directed traffic. He got nailed for excessive use of force. He got disciplined for 2 days, and he was working the basketball game that night. The gentleman on the right, Keith Smith, he had a pretty unique career. He went to the narcotics unit, got caught off duty throwing eggs at prostitutes. Right. He was sleeping in the truck that the other city officers were throwing eggs at prostitutes, and some of them were of minority. Guess what happened? 2 years later, when he pulled the trigger on a black male, what happened? He's a racist guy. Congratulations. I, as the watch commander, am stuck with two situations that turn into excessive use of force and a racially motivated shooting. Now you see why I lost my job? That's what you're dealt with, folks. So as you sit back there and you look at my wife and I, and you go, well, that's not going to happen. You know, my career is blossoming and everything. Next call from unemployment or indictment. That's what my favorite logo is, and I'll talk more about that as we go along. But I wanted you to see that and how important that was.
Well, and also what was important about that is that you did do everything society-wise right.
Correct.
But you're still brought up as an example. And so what if you would have had more to your life story? That's what they would have put up there.
Yeah, what if I had a hole in my umbrella, they'd have found it, is what I think the point is.
Yeah.
And they showed all those holes in people's umbrellas on that sheet, and they will pull that on you. So, good?
Got it.
Got it. All right, your turn.
That's mine. So, this is one of my favorite subjects. So, who in here has ADHD? Unmedicated or medicated?
Not that you can notice. Wow, did y'all see that butterfly?
Or if you're married to someone with ADHD, how many of you are married to someone with ADHD? You put your hand down. I don't have ADHD.
Oh, well, I was helping
I'm
you
the
out.
One that's married. So I am his medication, and our daughter's medicated. So part of our struggles, I guess, so after the shooting, part of the struggles that we've had, I think, is this ADHD mentality of the focus is me. I don't know if anybody has ADHD would agree or not agree that sometimes their focus right here with me. They're also very gifted in what they do. Yes? Does anybody agree? No, not that way.
Oh.
No. The choices that they make, the choices, they're very smart. Even our daughter, they can do 10 things at one time. Not finish them, but they can do 10 things at one time and delegate for us to finish them.
We're done with the speech.
No. Oh. So that's one of the things that we had to grow through during this transition, because Stacy was one who made decisions, did everything right, but I always tell him, it was like he mowed through everything, and then it was like, oh, I did that. And I wanted him to slow down and rethink and also converse with me about what was going on, not police decisions, but in life, because it was started to be of, I'm right, I'm self-reliant, I can do this. And that was a problem in our marriage.
I was a dude.
With ADHD.
Right, I was a dude, right? We're right. We're cops, we're right. We know we're right. We control everything in our world outside of our home. We had this discussion at lunch, didn't we, Miss Newman? We talked about the fact that we were right. And then we go home.
Here's a good
example.
And we're
not right.
Here's a good example of ADHD. So we had been married about 5 years. We have a newborn. And we're sitting on the couch like this. And I'm trying to have a conversation with him. And he's watching ESPN, reading the newspaper, and with something else.
Whatever.
And I'm talking to him, and I'm like, you're not listening to me. He goes, honey, I can write a ticket. I can read the newspaper. I can pay attention to the story. I can do everything
can
at one time.
I can talk on my radio.
Yes.
I can
do
write
everything
a ticket
at one
and
time.
Talk to a suspect at the same time.
And I said,
I'm sure I can listen to you read newspaper and watch TV at the same time.
I told him I wasn't a criminal.
That's right.
But I was his wife.
As she snatched the paper out, she said, I'm not a criminal.
In a nice way.
Oh, it was a nice way?
Mm-hmm.
No, it was a nice way.
So, that's the kind of the way he does things and is very gifted, and we've had to kind of step back.
But I'm a quick learner, because what I did was, is the next time she wanted to talk to me, I pulled the newspaper up and put it down. And I turned and looked at her, except Joe Theismann broke his leg. Y'all remember that? And the sports center's like, all right, this is really gross, so don't look at it if you don't want to see it, right? And I'm thinking, she's telling me some stupid story, and Joe Theismann broke his leg? So I went, oh. And I saw Joe break his leg, and she said,
turn it off.
She said, what'd I say? And I'm like, oh. So what I learned is you got to turn the TV off and talk. But anyway.
And that goes back to the police officers and the sitting there, right, living.
Exactly. You know, one of the things I tell everybody is that I was sitting at my table today. If you sat with me at the table today, other than the Newmans, don't raise your hand because I don't want to embarrass you. But as I was sitting at the table today, I was paying attention to what people do. And I have a huge issue with this, and that is that while sitting at tables with a bunch of cops, what are seven cops at a table doing? Anybody know when one's telling a story, what are the other six doing? So I couldn't hear you. Nope, they're waiting to tell their story, which is going to be much better than the one they just heard. So I have a rule, because I'm kind of the old guy at my work right now, because I am back in law enforcement, and that is that we don't tell police stories at a table, and we don't put our cell phones on, or we don't pick our cell phones up and use them. And let me tell you, folks, what that does is it changes the direction of the conversation, and it ends up being so much more impactful if you continue that pattern at your job, because you start talking about things that aren't related to the police side of it. It's a hard thing for people to do. I've had many people get mad at me and get up from the table and leave. But they always venture back because they're curious. Just something to feed off of. You good? Mm-hmm. It's not about you. Can we read that?
It's you.
Self-sufficient.
Self-reliant.
Self-righteous. Self-indulgence. Folks, I'm going to tell you, we're men. I'm a man, I guess, and very self-centered. I am very good at what I do. I was very successful at what I do. But you get humbled quickly. And you find out that you don't have any control over it. And you find out the people that you're impacting in a negative way includes the people closest to you. And many times I would have statements made by my wife that she was telling me things that were correct and I didn't listen. She was telling me things way before I ever lost my job and I didn't listen. And as you sit out there in the congregation now and you kind of listen, I want you to think about that for a minute. I don't know who's impacting you at your house. I don't know who impacted you at work, but they're probably telling you something you need to hear. But because of your success in your job and your success on call after call after call and the fact that you're the counselor at work, you have a different perspective. Nobody tells you you're wrong at your job. Very seldom do your supervisors show up at your call and tell you you're wrong. They usually don't show up. But you are being told that you have some failures. And they will catch you at some point. And mine didn't catch me in my job. I lost my job for the politics. But what they caught me in is the impact in my personal life. And the fact that I didn't listen to somebody else who had more knowledge at the time, who was at a different view than my skewed view. And that's these things that attack us. These things attack us. Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? When you don't trust God, you have anxiety. I think that picture is amazing. That picture is me, folks. That's me trying to plug every hole and fix everything. That picture's you. That picture's what you do in your job. And generally, you control everything. But it takes one chaotic situation to change that. Just one. Now, folks, all this aftermath stuff, I'm not involved in that. I don't know what goes on after that mentally. But I can tell you, before any of that stuff happens, where was I at? Cocky, confident, overconfident, arrogant. I can name the words, word after word after word. You don't agree with that, right?
I do.
Oh, you do agree with that. Okay. Yours?
And the reason... One of the things that we talked about, and this is the warnings that I would give him. It's not that he used to say I was intuitive or anyway. It was that I read too many stories in the Bible, Moses, Noah, Solomon, David, Joseph, and Job. And that was, they all started out with humility, but then they got gifted and then they were chosen and they felt that their giftedness was about them. And so I was sitting here telling my husband, I said, we're not praying, we're not asking God for guidance, we're not just doing things that in God's eyes. He was on his agenda, not God's agenda. And I sometimes wonder if this had to happen for us to get on our knees, to be broken and say, We can't do this without him. And Moses was one of my best examples that I remember, and that's that at the very end, so he was supposed to take these people, into the Israelites, into the promised land. Well, he didn't get to go. And the reason why he didn't get to go is because the last thing that God told him is, here's the, they needed water. The Israelites were complaining they didn't have water. And so God says, okay, speak to this rock and give them water. Well, Moses, because he knew everything, he struck the rock with his staff and water came out. And then he tells the people, we did this for you. No, that's why he didn't go into the promised land. He didn't do anything. It was God who did it. And so that's what the whole story is. And I kept telling him, I said, we need to humble ourselves. We need to ask God for guidance. We need to turn to him for everything. But by this point, it was too long gone.
It was. Do you want to read that one? Or you
No, that's that story. That's the story of Moses.
Perfect. Proverbs 31:26 says, she opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. A man with dreams needs a woman with vision. A little cheer from ladies?
No, it's not just about women. It's
I know, I'm going to get to that. Woman? Y'all heard that? The truth is, folks, I put those slides up there. She's like, take those down. I said, no. Let me tell you why those are important. This one happens to be about the person who I think has wisdom. Your person of wisdom might be a parent. It might be a partner at work. It might be your spouse at your house. It might be a preacher. Somebody's got wisdom, and they're giving it to you. The problem is not them giving it. The problem is whether you're open to receive it. In turn, you got wisdom. Are you sharing it? Remember my thing about the table? About not telling police stories, about not having your phone? Use your wisdom to impact somebody else. Folks, you don't think I take my past experiences and use them? I'm in Indiana. Taking a story that happened to our family and sharing it to you so hopefully it impacts one of you. That's my only purpose here. That's the only purpose, is to impact somebody here. And it might not be this session. It might be the other session. Something's going to impact you somewhere. It could be the Newman session. It could be Mr. Wallace's session. It could be any session of somebody in here.
But sometimes I think he was talking to somebody that was doing a ride-along recently, and the person would go out and have beers with others, but he struggled with it. And a lot of times we can get too churchy, and people judge us for being too churchy. That's a little bit of persecution, but you still have to stand up for what's right and do what's right. And then what about that conversation you were in at the table with?
Yeah, my supervisor, folks, is the same age as me. And my supervisor came to work on the shift that I'm on a couple years after I started working there, and he's a great guy. I've been married as long as we have. But somewhere in the middle of his relationship, he wandered and cheated on his spouse. They stayed married. It's been a struggle since. We were sitting at the table one day, because I've always been very vocal since all of this. And he said, you know what, Stacy? Had I met you before I ever met that other person, I'd have never wondered. He goes, the people I was around at the table then were encouraging me. You would have never encouraged me. That's the role you play. That's the role that you play. And that's the role that somebody around you plays. You know, we get warnings all the time, and you might be that warning. Their warnings are there. Are you following the warnings? Are you disregarding all the little lights that come on your speedometer? Are you disregarding the people sitting next to you and telling you? Are you disregarding the people in these classes that are telling you things? I don't know. But there is another light warning, and that is that you got to pray about it. No, you don't need to even pray about it. There's some guidance out there.
Go ahead.
Because we got to knock out time.
Okay, go ahead. Oh, the last part, ACBC.
Yeah. So the we want to tell you a few options that we figured out that worked, and then you guys can do what you want to do outside of when we walk out of this room. But there are some organizations out there that are faith-based counseling organizations and groups. And while both of us have experienced counseling in our own way that was, what's the term?
Secular.
I have found out, folks, that the faith-based counseling is about as independent as it gets, because it focuses on one area, and it focuses on God's Word. And we just left a conference this week. As a matter of fact, a pastor from a church around here was at that conference in Jacksonville. We met him on an elevator. And he was at this counseling conference called the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors. But there's a couple of groups out there that focus on that. I know that you have one right here at the First Baptist Church. What town is that just outside of here?
Goshen?
Goshen. The First Baptist Church there, and there's staff here that do this type of counseling. And it is very impactful. It takes you out of the secular world. It focuses on what God's words are, and the counseling is amazing. There's other organizations, organization called Faith Biblical Counseling. It's the same thing. You can get trained in it. You can be a counselor at your church. You can bring it to your town. You can impact others. You can be that foundation for somebody else. Martha and I are currently in the process of working through the one on the left and getting certified to be able to do the same counseling without going secular, without being saying, okay, it's okay for you, but another doctor says, well, I don't think that's okay. We have some facts to help you say that.
So. I think we're passionate about the biblical, and I don't even think it's biblical counseling. I can't stand that word. It's biblical living. It's basically the Bible is sufficient enough for us and for all of our situations and all of our issues. And so one of the things about right living, if you go through a situation that we went through, if you already have issues from the past in your marriages or individually, you get to this point, it's going to crack. It's natural. Our marriage only survived. We had just gone through, I would say, 5 years prior of working through all of our, I don't know what took us so long, but all of our marriage issues. Well, we had kids, so we really couldn't deal with those things, but God had a specific time that said, okay, now you're ripe, and now it's ready. But we dealt with issues of sexual abuse and all of our past issues with no parents, being orphaned and no path. So we worked on those issues, and then all of a sudden, this happened. But had we not worked on all those issues beforehand, I don't know if we would have made it, and I don't know if we would be here right now.
And had we not maintained our integrity in our own decisions
right.
in life, we wouldn't be there either. And
but
I think that's the key point.
It's basically getting on your knees and saying, God, I am so broken, and I don't know what to do, and you're going to help us through this. And that's why we're both very passionate about this biblical, I don't like counseling, so I'll say biblical living. And so if you went to one of these meetings, trainings, it's all about you. It's all about your growth and all about putting God first. And that's what I think. I am thankful for what we've gone through because it has made us put God first in everything. Not the little things, not the big things, no, everything. We don't take a step now without asking God, what is it that you want from us here? Where can we learn and grow from this?
So we go back to Jeremiah 29:11 again, and we tell you that, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. When you walk out this room and something critical happens in your life, like this, the gentleman up front and his wife, when those things happen in your life, there's a plan. I don't know what it is, and I don't have an answer for it, but there is a plan. And man says, show me and I'll trust you. But God says, trust me and I'll show you. And that's a hard thing for us to do. I like these real quick, and then we're going to close. The Lord will vindicate his people and relent concerning his servants when he sees their strength is gone and no one is left slave or free. But more importantly, I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all people on earth will be blessed through you. Let me take you back, and I want to give you the positive end of this in this world. I want to take you back to Gainesville, Florida. I want to take you back to what happened to me and my family. We're still married. Only 7 people outranked me at my agency. And of those 7 people, a large majority of them have been divorced since that instant. I'm not saying that's positive at all. What I'm saying is, it's eating and eating and eating and eating and eating at people, because at the end of the day, there's a thing called pillow talk. When you go home and you tell your spouse something that happened, and then you come back 5 months later and you tell them a different answer to the same question, there's a lot of lack of trust. And there's a lot of positive things in my and my wife's relationship now that's happened. We're involved in a lot of organizations. We're involved in, obviously, the counseling, North American Mission Board, Disaster Relief, Habitat for Humanity. And I still handle all personal security for a guy named Tim Tebow, and I still travel the country with him. And I work with the foundation. I've been with him 11 years. As much as I joke and play up here, folks, let me tell you, it has been a blessing to go through something like that and be able to bring it back and share it. I currently work for other entities. I work for Venture Cycling. One of the coolest things my wife and I do is we lead bicycle tours all over the country for a company out of Montana. We're getting ready to leave on Wednesday to Arizona and lead a bicycle tour in southern Arizona. Then we're going to Grand Canyon. Then we're going to El Paso, Texas. And oh, by the way, I'm still a cop in Florida. So pretty amazing the opportunities that we're having. I work for a company called SafeTech. And I also work for a company called WatchGuard, and I teach a class called Courageous Leadership around the country. I put this up here because I want you to know that, therefore, my brothers and sisters, you whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, stand firm in the Lord and his ways, dear friend. Stand firm. Stand firm for what you believe in. Stand firm in your ethics. Don't back down. I had somebody at my work that I told the truth about her relationship with her man. And she didn't talk, as his own partner, she didn't talk to me for a year. She has since come back and had conversations about it. Stand firm in your belief. Stand firm in your ethics. Don't wander. Don't wander. There's our contact information up there for anybody that wanted to be in contact with us for anything, any opportunities to come and talk, any chance we get a chance to impact, we're up there. There's many ways to contact us. We both just went on Facebook about 3 months ago. We kind of stayed off of it for a long time because all the negative stuff on us, but now there's a lot of positive things. I can't thank Vicki Newman enough. I can't thank Travis Yates enough. And obviously, I can't thank my wife enough for the things that she's done. We'll be on the Q&A later on, so we won't waste your time on that. We thank you for your time. You got anything else? Thanks, y'all. Enjoy your break.